Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 11th day of December, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And after looking at the usual plethora of stories from over the weekend and on this Monday morning, trying to decide which one was most representative that we might want to start off with today, I ended up deciding I better tell a story instead. There continue to be serious rumblings and warnings on the economic meltdown front. Just how long does the almighty fiat dollar have left before the entire world realizes just how far gone it is and ditches it completely? Ultimately, even Americans will start to figure that one out. But we're not quite there yet, although you can smell it from here. Plandemic 2.0 is rumbling and almost all of the pieces are evidently in place, but that hasn't happened yet either. The biggest bunch of scientific BS in history is still being pushed at places like the UN's COP28, where billionaires fly their corporate jets to tell you how you have to starve and their carbon footprint is immaterial, which is the only thing they're saying that's actually true, even if their carbon footprint is actually surpassed only by their hypocrisy. And there were lots of other candidates to kick things off today, too. Turns out, the one that actually attracted my attention was one that was a long time coming, and we will get there in just a minute. It's actually good news. But when I saw the coverage on that one, such as it was, it inspired me to take a look around and just see how the WAPO, New York Times, and other criminally negligent networks and so-called news agencies were covering it, or if they were at all. And in the process, I found, sadly, largely what I expected to, but I did come across this piece, courtesy of Martin Armstrong on his ArmstrongEconomics.com site, entitled, and this fit, and this is how we're going to start off, "We have the stupidest people in government in history." And guess what? The article is really short and consists mostly of just the other headlines that he was putting together to make a similar point. One of them says, video, heart issues are skyrocketing in the military, says a U.S. Navy medic. Gee, tell me something we don't know. Related story says Air Force again has dangled a $600,000 check in bonuses in order to try to keep pilots in uniform, that is if they don't drop dead walking to their planes. The commentary says that the Biden regime's stupidity in mandating that those in the military submit to this worthless experiment in the mRNA vaccines or be dishonorably discharged has resulted in not just a shortage of pilots and, of course, not just the inability of the U.S. military to actually fight a war, which they're pushing for anyway. And not only that, folks, these idiots are trying to say we can fight it on three fronts, too, China, Russia, and the Mideast, because our fuzzies, trannies, and perverts can take on your well-trained military fighting men any day. Does anybody remember the Monty Python flick, The Holy Grail and The Black Knight?
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
It's just a flesh wound.
The Black Knight, too, obviously had too high of an impression of his combat skills, but at least he would have still claimed to be a man. Writes Martin Armstrong correctly, this is so bad, you just plain can't make this stuff up. My own lawyer, he said, who took the shot so he could travel, ended up with blood clots and now cannot fly. Pfizer should have been shut down. And the heads of all of these evil corporations, as well as those traitors in the U.S. military who foisted it on our armed services, should be in prison for treason and manslaughter. But the so-called representatives in Congress who signed off on all this would never admit they passed such decrees on the orders of the like of Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum and international fascism. Oh, and by the way, that $600,000 bonus for those who choose to stay in uniform is a maximum over 12 years. That's provided they live that long and that the dollar survives that long, too. But, folks, the story that I almost started off with, actually it was several stories, all kind of interrelated, had to do with Elon Musk and Twitter, now X, which has decided finally to reinstate Alex Jones because if they actually cared about free speech, they never would have done anything remotely like what they did to begin with. But it evidently took Musk quite a while to realize he'd been duped. He did, however, ask Twitter users, as promised, whether or not Alex Jones should be reinstated to the platform. And with almost 2 million votes finally in, the consensus was simply overwhelming, with over 70% saying yes. To which Elon Musk tweeted on X, "Vox populi, vox Dei, the people have spoken, and so it shall be." After which, he held an interview and evidently invited Alex Jones to conduct it, along with a number of other people that the Waystream likes to call far right-wing conspiracy theorists. And that now obviously includes Elon Musk. Which brings me full circle, folks, to the meta news that encouraged my introduction today, because ultimately, I was surprised how little coverage the event got. The Daily Mail at least talked about it, with spin that was, while not unexpected, utterly over the top. The implication was nothing short of how dare they bring back that conspiracy theorist who wanted all those kids at Sandy Hook dead, and thought it was a hoax anyway. Or wait a minute, is that a bit of an exaggeration, given that the truth there, including what he said about it, and apologized over and over and over and over and over again for, has been out for years at this point? Not so as you'd know it from the Daily Mail headline, which says, and they didn't even mention the reinstatement in the headline, Elon Musk asks Alex Jones about the whole Sandy Hook thing, says the headline, on X's Spaces, as the controversial host, and that's the nicest thing they said about him in this whole piece, laments the constant apologies he issued for saying the school shooting was a hoax. Despite, says the subheadline here, like Adolf Hitler said, folks, just keep repeating that big lie. Eventually, people may believe it. So here goes, quote, the conspiracy theorist repeatedly calling the Sandy Hook school shooting a hoax. Oh, good grief. The billionaire entrepreneur, they claim, spoke with Jones to an audience of over 60,000 listeners on the live streaming platform. That's probably a gross understatement, especially now that people are realizing it will be up soon for replay. And most of the rest of the story, folks, was total unmitigated BS, focusing on pictures of the poor little kids and how awful it was that Alex Jones ever said such a thing. And he owes $1 billion to those who were victimized by his evil speech, which is at least, I guess, as reasonable as those who were never slaves being victimized by those whose great-great-great-grandkids, they say, now owe them trillions of bucks. As Alex Jones himself pointed out, this was an eye-popping, fully over 2 hours of interview, and they focused on about 1% of it. The part that even Elon Musk seemed to want to get out of the way so they could talk about other, obviously more important things. But it was the Daily Mail spin, folks, that got me asking myself the question, gee, just how did the other really nasty news outlets that represent the Waste Streams Ministry of Truth handle the same story? Or did they? Answer, when it comes to the Washington Post, barely. And the New York Times? Well, near as I could tell, not at all. Certainly not on any of the front pages. A search of the rag, however, which in electronic form no longer even merits the title of birdcage liner, did at least admit on page B2 on Saturday that the evil Elon Musk was bringing the, quote, conspiracy theorist Alex Jones back to X. The WAPO, though, seemed to be far more upset with their other archenemy, Tucker Carlson. And on December the 11th, they had a piece on the national news page about how Tucker Carlson helped persuade Elon Musk to reinstate Alex Jones on X, how dare he, and actually did an interview with the guy on that same platform. At least they got around to admitting that Tucker's interview with Alex Jones got over 16 million views, which got the attention of ex-owner Elon Musk, who then posted his poll. But as I indicated up front, while I was doing my dive into yellow journalism, I couldn't help but note just how bad it really was. For example, here was one of the pieces on the WAPO's front page, and how dare they suggest that Tucker Carlson needs fact-checking, because his interview with Alex Jones was, quote, littered with false claims. With this up there, quote, how a true believer's flawed research helped legitimize homeschooling. Say what? Does anybody listening to this show really believe crap like that? I can tell you folks, having known literally dozens, if not hundreds, of homeschooled kids that have now grown into fine young adults over the last several decades, that there's literally no comparison. And as compared to what? How many of us know probably more, if not many times more, drug addicts, reprobates, and blithering idiots who graduated from the public cesspools? Some of them, though, didn't manage to get out of there with all their genitalia intact. And the WAPO literally must have no shame to print tripe like this. Quote from the headline, Brian Race says that homeschool students do better, but his daughter tells a different story. The man who heads the National Home Education Research Institute in Salem, Oregon, has spent the last 3 decades as one of the nation's top evangelists for homeschooling, begins the hit piece, and he's published studies purporting to show that these students soar high above their peers in what he calls, and I would say this is an understatement, folks, institutional schools. As you know, your host prefers the term public cesspools or indoctrination centers. That was long before they got as bad as, well, as horrible as they are now. But listen to this. Ray's research says this reprobate writing the piece, Laura Meckler, is nowhere near as definitive as his evangelism makes it sound, because his samples are not randomly selected, and much of his research has been funded by a powerful homeschooling lobby group. Critics even say his work is driven more by dogma than scholarly detachment. You mean the same critics that want to take your kids' genitalia off and inject them with Cyclone B that was never actually scientifically tested? Well, at least not that they're willing to tell you about. Well, they want to feed them bugs and make sure they starve to death in a carbon-free world so they can fly their jets and continue pushing their dogmatic pantheistic dogma about how Mother Earth just hates when you exhale CO2? Good grief. And I'm not going to spend really any more time on this piece of utter crap, but I will quote one paragraph here. Listen to this and think about how, well, idiotic it is if you have any understanding of actual science or even good English writing. Taken as a whole, and I'm quoting, the academic literature shows mixed academic outcomes for homeschooling. Some studies find benefits. Others show deficiencies. Unquote. And what an insightful critique. Is it just possible, folks, that just like some public cesspools are less evil than others because maybe the parents care a bit more and pay attention to what's being shoved down their little kids' throats? Just like some parents do a better job of educating them and, yep, keeping them away from the crap that intends to kill them than others do? Why, I bet if I searched hard enough and wanted to do a twisted study, I could even find a couple of good public schools out there somewhere, especially if they ignore the federal guidelines and don't teach to the federal standards, unconstitutional as they obviously are. This is tripe masquerading as informed commentary. Oh, and by the way, what's the real problem here? You knew it. If you read deep enough into this bit of crap, you'll see it. Quote, Ray comes from a conservative Christian movement that sees homeschooling as a biblically mandated counterweight to secular modernity. In other words, the kind of things that little kids should grow up knowing, whether they're true or not, especially if they're not, like we enlightened ones do, who reject all of that God of the Bible stuff, and also know that math and science are white privilege. Don't even ask them about English and grammar, because you know what they've done to American history. Oh, yeah, and how do you know whether or not homeschooling is really or really isn't better than public cesspool indoctrination? Answer? Why, you subject them to the battery of standard tests written by guess who and see whether or not they get into the selective elite colleges where they can finish the dumbing down. This is beyond the pale, folks. I gotta ask it, unless you want your kid to learn how to grow up and be on the take, why the hell would you want to send them to a college like Yale or Harvard or the University of California at pick a leftist campus, where the only thing of value they're really going to learn is how to be a good debt slave for the rest of their lives? But if you don't understand things like selection bias, conditional probabilities, then yeah, how tests too can measure absolutely nothing worth knowing, you might miss the point. Let me just ask it this way. Do you really think that an election could be so blatantly stolen, except in a nation of dumbed down, blithering idiots? And, of course, those who enable them and are willing to sit still and watch while it happens? This is as close as the author gets to actually admitting a bit of that truth. Home education, she says, is not an easy area to study because very few states require these children to take exams. You know, the kind that we would want to write for them. And this is the result of intense lobbying by homeschool advocates and a contrast with public cesspools, she spelled it wrong, where almost all students are routinely tested. And we know what that shows, don't we? It's just not possible to, quote, conduct a gold standard academic study where some students are randomly assigned to homeschool and others forced to suffer at the hands of, quote, traditional school. That's a funny way to put it, isn't it? I doubt that in traditional schools, kids would have had to worry quite so much, I certainly didn't, about being forced to take various prescription drugs, or later on, having your breasts, if you're a little girl, or whatever else you might want to keep, if you're a little boy, cut off. I can't help but think, you know what? Just let those parents who care actually decide what's best for their own children. What a concept. But as bad as the WAPO is, it was the New York Times that, as usual, pretty much made your host want to take a shower after I even perused what they were calling news. For example, one of the big subheadings on the front page is called the COP28 Climate Summit, What You Need to Know. Carbon captures potential. Big oil, it says, versus science. Oh, and my personal favorite, the climate FAQ, because climate science is complicated. So, you dumbed-down public school-educated New Yorkers, here's what you need to know, whether it's true or not. Now, the actual stories in this section, that was just the heading up top, have titles like What Ails Offshore Wind, Supply Chains, Ships, and Interest Rates. Yeah, the problem, it says, is government officials and energy developers have misjudged, gee, do you think, the difficulty of constructing huge clean energy projects in the United States. And this in spite of the fact that they're being subsidized to the tune of billions of newly printed fiat bucks. But no, folks, they didn't mention that last part. They do, though, try to blame things like the Booga Booga flu and the bioweapons and all of the idiotic stuff that was done as a result for the problems, even though they admit, they're not going to be nearly as wonderful as they probably thought they would. How about this one? Countries most at risk, how dare they, call the proposed climate agreement, maybe somebody at least can see through what they're being force-fed here, a death warrant. The subheading says the working draft made public at the UN summit of all the wonderful people who know what's better for us than we do in Dubai would not commit nations to phasing out the fossil fuels that are dangerously booga, booga, booga heating the planet. This, folks, is what passes for news from Big Brother's public-private partners anyway in the Ministry of Truth. Now, as for a bit more of a different kind of look, let's turn to this story. I'll admit I like it a lot better than the New York Times. It comes from Zero Hedge, and it says that the UN climate Karens have melted down. And this is pretty much the same story, but told a little bit more truthfully, after the COP28 summit has decided, maybe they just couldn't keep telling the lie and getting people to believe it, that they needed to ditch the fossil fuel phase-out language. As you might expect, the piece begins with a reminder about what Sultan Al-Jaber, president of the UN's COP28 climate summit, said last week, for which he drew such great derision from the whores assembled there at the conference with their carbon-spewing jets and lavish lifestyles, when he insisted that there is no science behind the calls to phase out fossil fuels. And we talked about that part last week, folks, because it's actually true. Before getting into a hilarious eco-fight with three leading women from the conference over climate change and gender. But while those remarks from Al-Jaber do criticism from the so-called scientists and other whores there at the conference, I guess I could point out again that mere hookers, folks, only lease their bodies. These whores don't have any real integrity to sell, but they're more than happy to sell out your bodies and your children's. They were in stark contrast, notes Tyler Durden, to the view of Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, who claimed at the climate summit on Friday. And by the way, folks, if this was some leftist rag like the Daily Mail, they should say, without evidence, but no, they're not going to say that. Quote, the science is clear. The 1.5 degrees Celsius limit is only possible if we ultimately stop burning all fossil fuels. Not reduce, not abate, phase out. With a clear time frame, unquote. Uh-oh, did he actually say the quiet part out loud? The scientists say you are going to die. So, continues Zero Hedge, fast forward to Monday, when the leftist, and they didn't put the word in there, but I will, because the leftists love it, Financial Times reported that a draft agreement from the summit has now dropped all references to that phase-out of fossil fuels, following opposition from oil and gas-producing countries led by Saudi Arabia. So isn't that kind of funny, while at the same time ironic? The people who are going to die because they don't have fossil fuels to harvest, plant, ship, and cook their food, much less heat their homes and even power their electric cars, don't seem to be able to stand up for themselves, even though they're the ones that'll be the first to die. But it's the producing nations that just want to sell some oil that will, maybe at least, stand up for them. They're just not going to want to take dollars for it, though. So now you already know how the WAPO, New York Times, and other leftist rags will spin it. The document says the peace, which will have to be agreed on by almost 200 countries at the summit in Dubai, why? They can just force it down people's throat. Who cares whether those countries agree or not? We'll set out an optional range of actions that countries could take to cut emissions to net zero by 2050. They won't say it. I will. There's an or else in there somewhere, don't you know? All of this includes reducing, quote, consumption and production of fossil fuels in a just, orderly, and equitable manner so as to achieve net zero carbon emissions by before or around 2050 in keeping with the science, unquote. Don't you dare say otherwise, because the science is a god and does not allow opposition. Continues Tyler Durden, though, the climate Karens want the text to go further by committing to a phase-out of fossil fuels, which any honest idiot could tell you would have extreme repercussions, gee, do you think, in terms of both energy price inflation, which of course hurts the poor, which they really don't care about in spite of their protestations the most, and the logistics of shifting developed nations onto unreliable primary energy sources, things, folks, that will eventually run down because they have gain less than that required to maintain a viable civilization. Said Al-Jaber, we've made progress, but we still have a lot to do, including on fossil fuel language, he said. referring to that 1.5 degrees Celsius target, which, says the story, was set during that landmark 2015 Paris Climate Accord as countries agreed to limit temperature increases to well below 2 degrees Celsius and ideally 1.5, as if that's even possible. Folks, as if it was even a concern. That's a bigger issue as we enter into a solar minimum, but they're not about to talk about that because, you know, the sun, that's not part of real science the way us whores want you to understand it. And even if it were, says Zero Hedge, that would assume China and India would have to give a rat's ass and play ball in this completely academic, well, is there a more polite term for what used to be called a circle jerk? I don't think so, because what's being done is far worse than anything high school kids once thought was really bad and did in private. Now they're doing it to everybody, and damn the consequences. By the way, I think it's interesting, too. It's not just China and India that didn't get consulted and aren't going to participate. It's that big ball of fusion in the sky called the sun, too, that somebody might want to clue in. This really is the worst kind of hubris masquerading as pagan science. Quote, it is our very survival that is at stake. That's why in every room our negotiators have been pushing tirelessly for decisions that align with staying under 1.5 degrees C, said the Samoan Minister of Natural Resources, speaking on behalf of a group of small island countries that have been scared out of their limited wits by the booga, booga, booga of non-existent man-made global warming. Said another petrified scientific imbecile, quote, we will not go silently to our watery graves. And ironically, as Zero Hedge notes, he spoke to a room full of elites with their beachfront carbon fuel air-conditioned mansions. But arguably the biggest climate Karen of all, who also made billions by pushing the BS, Al Gore, wrote a lengthy screed on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, slamming COP28 as having fallen short of his lofty expectations and, quote, being on the verge of complete failure due to the elimination of that idiotic phase-out language. Said the booga booga billionaire, the world desperately needs to phase out fossil fuels as quickly as possible, but this obsequious draft reads as if OPEC dictated it word for word. It's even worse, booga booga booga, than many of you had feared. It is of the petrostates by the petrostates, unquote.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
Still, though, not to worry. There's plenty of evil socialism and an intended destruction of the poor that is going to be in the COP28 documents. I won't go through all the details here because they're nothing except, I've already said it, idiotic, counterproductive, and downright deathly destructive. Things like continuing to try to destroy the ability to produce electricity with coal, regardless of how clean it's gotten to be in the American states. But this one is so asinine that it deserves special ridicule. They call for the phase out of inefficient fossil fuel subsidies that encourage wasteful consumption and do not address energy poverty. Because obviously that's their job. Because that's the clear goal, to make sure the world is in energy poverty. Or just transitions. And you can guess what that means. Yeah, you're going to starve too. As soon as possible. Now imagine, folks, if they're that concerned about wasteful, inefficient subsidies, why didn't they come out and say, hey, maybe we should replace the inefficient woke tech subsidies that encourage wasteful boondoggles like offshore wind? And how dare I say that? Because these projects still fail even with the ridiculous subsidies. And they know it. The asinine point here is, without these inefficient woke tech subsidies, most of their jobs and all of their so-called research would cease to exist. And the whole world would be a hell of a lot better off. But still, I do think it's interesting because the Zero Hedge piece ends with a picture of a young boy, looks to be about 8 years old or so, from a black African country, working in a cobalt mine, digging with his bare hands. And the caption says, just guess who else can't wait for the Green Revolution? And that, folks, is something you're not going to read or see in the Daily Mail, WAPO, or New York Times. And that'll do it for today. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.